Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
If you wish to give me a present?
I'd like to be a
Hey, everybody. Dentist. Welcome back to the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. We present to you part two of A Charlie Brown Christmas. This is, and you'll hear us mention it a few times, we've already said so, this is the second longest running Christmas special of all time. Most likely the second most popular. I have seen some rankings of the greatest Christmas specials of all time. Some people have called this the greatest. For me, in this rewatch, I never saw it as one of the greatest. It was iconic. It was nostalgic. But seeing it again recently, not having seen it for a long time, as I said in part one, I have completely fallen back in love with this. I think it's beautiful. I couldn't be more excited to talk about it. And with that, I will give you part two of A Charlie Brown Christmas. Also, one reminder, if you haven't already done so, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us that five-star rating and review, and tell a friend about us. We work really hard. Lots and lots of research goes into these, and the best way to get us back is to let us know you care and that you're into this. We really appreciate it. So with that being said, let's go to part two of A Charlie Brown Christmas. Okay, guys, let's go to the scene-by-scene breakdown. Snow falling on the pond, we see the Peanuts gang skating, and Christmas Time Is Here plays. We have Linus in his blanket, and Charlie Brown heading outside with skates over the shoulders. They walk into the town through the woods, and then over to the brick wall, and I found that this was very powerful. When Charlie Brown looks really sad, and to Linus, and Linus looks at him and says, wait, what's wrong, Charlie Brown? And Charlie Brown explains, Christmas time is coming, but I just don't feel happy. He doesn't feel the way he's supposed to. He just doesn't understand Christmas. He likes getting presents and sending cards all the time, but he still isn't happy. I just give credit because there's such a melancholy voice in the actor, Peter Robbins. But also I feel like this is the beginning of so many timely sentiments that come up in this, you know, where people are like, it's, I don't know, Kelsey the other day was like, this time of the year makes me really sad, yeah. Right? So I when I saw this, it was like, whoa. And I guess as a kid, this just went over my head. But when I saw it, I said, wow, this is real. To me, seems really advanced, especially with the younger generations. You carry so much heaviness. So to me, I'm like, I could see a lot of people really resonating with this.
100%, Kev. Yeah, it's like the short days, the dark, and then just the pressure and the stress.
I think the pressure of Christmas and, yeah, you know, the FOMO and whatever. But I want to hear from Kelsey and Evan specifically about this. You know, did that resonate with you?
Yeah, I just feel like there was something about this special that, like, from that moment, like, throughout, I never felt like it was for a different audience besides, like, me. You know what I mean? Like, I really did feel like everything resonated. Like, I don't know, the way he wrote it, and I feel like maybe just anyone can see themselves in these characters, but I was like, yeah, that's literally exactly how I'm feeling.
Heather,
like, I never questioned
you?
It.
Does that kind of set the tone for you at the beginning of this? It just moved me.
Yeah, I think so. I think it hits. It reminds me of, I had a playwriting teacher in college who would tell us, like, if you want to, like, an effective time is to set something that is going to be kind of upsetting and full of conflict at the phase, so that you have, like, these forced positive emotions with people, that it, like, I forget exactly the effect he was trying to, like, achieve with it, but that was some advice he gave us. And I feel like you have that in some, certainly, but some Christmas media. And I think that is maybe part of what's being reflected in that opening.
I think a lot of people, because there's such a buildup, so if you don't have the family, you don't have the people to spend the time with, you don't have maybe the partner, you don't have the money for whatever. It just all leads to a feeling of a letdown. And it speaks for Linus shoots back at him, you know, Lucy's right. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you're the Charlie Browniest. You're the only person I know who can take a wonderful season like Christmas and turn it into a problem, which also, to me, really spoke volumes, because I feel like there's so many classic Americans who it's kind of so good that, yeah, they have to find something wrong with it because we have so much free time. Yeah. You know, he's on a wall. He's not working on a farm in the 1800s, Christian. I don't think the kids on the farms that trying to, you know what I mean? Or trying to help support the family. I don't think they have time to sulk in a wall.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Charlie, how they don't, you know, like, what does he have to be so depressed about? And I love that he uses the word depressed. But at the same time, as a kid watching this, you can go like, oh, I guess it's okay to not be quite so happy there. Because, look, there's the joy of opening presents on Christmas. But there can, depends on how old you are, there can be the stress of like, is mom not going to like the present I got her again this year? Yes. You know, you know, is my sibling going to make fun of something that I wanted? You know, it's there's a lot of like those like little like micro.
He's heavy. He's carrying a lot. And again, now we know why, learning a little bit about Schultz. We go back to the pond. We see, everyone's doing their little skating. You've got Pigpen in his dust. Snoopy just continues to be he's the star in his own way because he skates effortlessly. He's amazing. But then you also see him, you know, he screws up too. He's mischievous. I end up saying it a little later, but I'm going to say it now. And Evan, I'll go to you on this one. Did you see symptoms of ADHD or ADD in Snoopy? Just a quick question. My generation doesn't know enough about it, but I'm just kind of wondering.
I don't.
But
think
also
I know
maybe on the spectrum a little, but then like that's why it also speaks to his genius.
I don't know.
He can cook.
Know enough about either of those to say. So I'm not gonna like commit one way or the other.
So pretty much ADHD. So let's just assume ADHD over ADD. Sure. You're thinking more ADHD. Okay.
Not well, Kevin. ADD is ADD has been dropped. Now it's just ADHD. Period. Oh. So
just so you know, I have it. Okay, great. So now I have ADHD. Wonderful.
Correct.
All right, me
correct.
And Snoopy
and Kelsey.
Okay, but you know what's also I just wrote it. Snoopy is the man, but he's also a ball breaker. Yeah. but
I love him.
I love him too. No, it's nice to see somebody that gives less of an F, and he doesn't. The one thing I noticed too. Again, why I think Schultz is such a great writer, it's such a statement on civilians. And when I say the term civilians, I mean your average group of people, mob rule, everyone drinking the Kool-Aid, everyone just going with the flow. It's about presence. It's about and what I love about Linus and Charlie Brown especially is Charlie Brown's in the middle of it. Linus has his moments, which I'll get into. But Snoopy's just, again, maybe it is the spectrum or ADHD, but he is just, I just don't think he subscribes nearly as much as them. I think he's doing his own thing. And yeah, I think he really, truly lives up to Joe Cool.
I love that, Kev. He's like in with the group when he wants to be.
When he wants
around,
to, yeah.
And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to go, do my own thing. And then
I'm
going to
do my own contest and I'm going to win an award. I'm going to have my own Thanksgiving.
Right.
They're all having fun. And it's interesting, too, to see, you know, I already mentioned to, you know, we cut the Coca-Cola thing due to advertising standards. But after a brief moment of reflection, looking out his window, Charlie Brown heads to the mailbox. He glances into it to see if anyone's around. He opens the mailbox and he yells, hello in there. No one sent him a Christmas card. And this is stuff that I don't know. This really just really tears my heart out. I know no one likes me. Why do we have to have a Christmas to remind me? And I feel like, again, like he says it on the nose, but I feel like that's the stuff that really does bother people. But to hear a little boy say this, it's heart-wrenching.
Kev, right before he looked in the mailbox, when he actually glanced around to see if anyone was looking when he opened the mailbox, was the part that just cut me to the core. I was like, oh my God, the poor kid is so afraid to open the mailbox that he's making sure none of his buddies are around. I like welled up.
Oh,
oh,
such a good find. Yeah.
Oh, brutal.
And Gen Z millennials, we just thought it was funny. We just, what? We didn't just detached. It just meant nothing.
Detached.
What is a mailbox? Is it because you didn't see this kind of the kind of bullying we saw? We saw a way different kind of bullying than you guys. Maybe, you guys have the social media bullying. I don't know, really.
And we had a little bit of that. I don't know. I think I'm not sure what it is, Kev. Maybe it is that. Maybe I get sad about it. It makes me really sad. But then I'm also like, come on. I'm like, why do we got to write him like that? Like, that's sad. poor Charlie okay. Brown, just getting off the shit. I don't know.
There's a little bit there. See, it's a little covered up, Kelsey. I think a lot of your generation, a lot of it is kind of covered up. And then when I kind of clear the way,
that's
you're
true.
Saying it without saying it. Evan, comedic view, funny moment, what?
I think I'm more sympathetic there. Bored. I mean, I've seen this so many times. It's kind of hard to like get so emotional about it because I just like have it memorized. I'm sympathetic there.
Yeah, but you are sympathetic. I mean, granted, you've seen it every year, so I understand that. But I will say, some of these things, man, still get me. I still, the Year Without Santa Claus, the Blue Christmas song. I mean, there's just moments I still, Rudolph being shunned by everybody. I don't know. Still gets to me. And maybe I just need to get over it.
There is a moment that gets me. I don't want to jump ahead. I'll bring it up when we
get to. Good.
There
no, all right.
That I but, feel for him. But it's
but let me say
later,
here.
So I don't want
to. Sorry, I was going to say, Kev, the Rudolph thing, I still can't get over Rudolph. I'm still scarred by watching that. Okay, so it's okay. They were so mean. So
Okay. All right. So you're still there.
You're allowed
sometimes I do think with the millennial generation, the only way to offend you is to take your phone away. Because that's really mean.
That is mean.
So it's interesting. This was Anne's note. Charlie Brown comes across Pigpen making a dusty snowman. But Anne's note about Snoopy being collarless, eating a huge pile of bones, reading the paper on top of his blue doghouse. So Anne, your note was that we usually see him in a collar and it's usually a red doghouse, right?
Yeah, and I just thought like, I made that note about him being collarless because he was just sitting there kind of like an old man eating his, bag of Doritos or whatever, his boxes.
He's just doing his thing.
Pork rinds. He's just doing his thing. Reading the paper,
doesn't care. He really doesn't care.
It was the only special that he did have the blue doghouse, so I just wanted to point that out, just as kind of a production note throw in for the scene by scene, because his doghouse is usually red, and he's not usually, dare I call it, naked without a collar.
And did you have the Snoopy electric toothbrush? Do you remember this?
Okay, so
it was the red doghouse, and you would have Snoopy on the top, and on Snoopy's head would be your toothbrush, and it was electric. And you,
I had everything Snoopy. I had dress up Snoopy. I had his sister. I had Woodstock. I had the toothbrush. I had the ice, the snow cone machine. If it had Snoopy, I had.
Oh, the Snoopy!
My trash can was Snoopy.
Wait a second, back up. No, back the F up, and I had the mom, unfortunately, like, oh my God, the Evel Knievel doll. Look, you can make it go over jumps and everything. And I had the mother be like, yeah, it's junk.
Right.
So with the Snoopy snow cone machine or the Mickey gumball machine or the
Popeye
gumball
in.
Machine, the Snoopy snow cone machine, the quote I got was, yeah, you'll use it once and then you'll never even use it again. But I always let the Snoopy snow cone machine was something I always wanted. So, Anne, did you actually make snow cones with
it? Okay, so my parents would have been fine with your mom 100%, but my Nana had a soft spot for all things Peanuts also. So most of the gifts I had that I just listed were from her. God rest her soul. Thanks, Nana. And I not only made snow cones, I used to make a little stand out front in my front yard with my little sister. And we would sell snow cones to the neighborhood kids. Off the little machine. Yep.
You know what?
Wow.
So tell your mother that one, Kev. So it wasn't just junk. It was a money maker.
I don't even remember this.
Back in the 70s.
I was, sorry if I was so busy working. Yeah, you had it. My mother would never say you.
It's the best.
You had it so hard, didn't you? That's all right. Keep making fun of me. Yes, mother. Now I kind of want to. I do want, but do you have the toothbrush as well? Because my brother had the toothbrush.
Oh yeah.
Oh yep. God, you gotta love commercialism.
And now I see it all over the place. Snoopy is back everywhere.
Well, we said that too. The Rankin Bass characters are everywhere as well. Yeah, it's a lot of times where I know they sold a portion of the estate to Sony, so now you have all those people involved. So they're gonna work on product. It's funny, a lot of these franchises kind of just die. I have a friend who, he deals in clothing, Andrew Lee, Kelsey, Andrew. But he deals with entertainment merchandise, and he'll buy the licenses. And one of the things he enjoys is he'll go and buy Casper the Ghost or the Jetsons. He'll buy intellectual property that no one's really using anymore. And so they're kind of like, well, geez, if you want to take it and make some clothes and throw some money, why not? We're not doing anything with it. But sometimes it just comes down to that. And you need, it depends who's running these things, whether they keep it going or not. I digress. Okay. So by the way, still, we knew a lot of pig pens growing up. Ann and I, our generation had a lot of pig pens, a lot. I don't even want to know what went on in Pig Pen's house. You kind of see a version of it from Kenny on South Park. Kenny definitely comes from the rough parents, like we've seen his lifestyle. But I tend to think, I wonder if Pig Pen is neglected, although I have evidence to the contrary. They just not. He just actually might just be a slob, rather than someone who's neglected and came from a bad home. So,
right. I don't want to jump ahead, but in the way he speaks in this episode,
yes, we will get into it. He shows rather eloquent. We'll get into it. He'll show something to the contrary. So he maybe, in our minds, he is one of these eccentric, super smart, like a lot of the computer nerds that I know, their hygiene, or look at Einstein, you know, those guys, it was like, he just wore the same sweater every day. So maybe he falls there, but I don't know. We knew a lot of pig pens.
Oh, yeah.
And they
I'm not naming names.
And they didn't come from good homes. So, again, I digress. Now, we meet a Patty in this special. But my question to you, Ann, is this Peppermint Patty? Because she doesn't sound like her. It doesn't act like her. It's just a random Patty.
Just random Patty.
A one-day hire.
I think she was in, like, 4 specials, Patty. I'd have to double-check that fact. But she was just a random Patty.
Oh, by the way, going back to Violet, who said, when Charlie Brown said to her, thanks for the card, and she's like, I didn't send you a card. And he's like, sarcasm. I wrote this with Violet. I feel like the Violets and the Shermies, are they just glorified extras, Anne? Like, do they, in this universe?
Violet in this one did nothing but insult and be mean. So I don't know if it was glorified or just she was just an evil addition.
Yeah, pretty girl. She's a mean, pretty girl.
Like she was one of the mean girls.
She's a mean girl because Lucy's mean-ish, but she has her moments, which we'll get into. But yeah, Violet could just be the predecessor of the classic mean girl.
Just the mean girl who doesn't even want to participate. She's like, no, I didn't send you a card. Why would I send you a card? She's terrible. Whereas Shermie, I think, is just kind of one of those kids. He wasn't popular. He wasn't unpopular. You know, he just kind of.
He was there. I don't even remember
him. He was just kind of there.
Also named after a friend, a childhood friend of Schultz, by the way. So they're eating, catching snowflakes. Linus thinks they need sugar, which is funny. I wonder, okay, Evan, I'm going to go to you because you're the youngest person here, but was sugar as big a part of your childhood as it was ours? Like we had like children's cereals.
What sense? But
were they aware? I mean, were your parents aware to how to limit it? Oh, so it was limited. That I had a feeling.
I think less for me than a lot of other kids. So I'm gonna hesitantly say yes, it was a part of most people of my generation's childhood.
My mom was a dietitian too. I didn't get a lot of sugar.
So I think, I don't think that would come up on a cartoon today. Mm-hmm. I think they'd be more responsible, but also I don't know if it's as top of mind. I mean, they used to put it into us intravenously. You would get a bag of Domino's granulated sugar. They would pour it into into an IV bag. I mean, and every cereal, Captain Crunch, Lucky Charms, and the coolest characters, always prizes in the box. Such a great scam.
Yeah. Advertised on Saturday morning cartoons. I mean, that was the best aisle to walk down in the grocery store.
Always.
You know, and it was like a fight over which sugary cereal you wanted, you know, even the healthy ones.
Shout out to some obscure ones. Quisp,
vitamin. One of my favorites.
Yeah, Quisp.
They had the Frankenberry. Blueberry, those were good.
Yeah, by the way, okay, did
Honeycomb
pass you by? I know Honeycomb's still around, but did Evan and Kelsey, at least for your friends, with the sugared cereals pass you by, or was that still a thing?
We didn't have it in the house, but I think I've eaten it at, like, I don't know, a friend, something.
Different planet.
Mine was a treat. My sister and I always got one bowl of cocoa pebbles after gymnastics before.
Nice.
Because we would come home starving, and my mom was like, "Well, I don't have dinner, so you can have that because you just worked out for a zillion hours."
Oh, millennial mom. Yes.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of it.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of it. Lucy claims that the snowflakes are too early to eat. She always waits till January.
That was my favorite line of the whole thing.
Yeah, really?
I literally texted you. I thought it was so funny. I don't know why. Just like her being like, yeah, I don't eat the December snowflakes. I wait till January. Just like, what?
Go ahead, Kev.
For me, the response from Linus of him saying, they look right to me.
I know.
It shows that even as a younger brother, and she's such a big bully and such a big personality, and he shows the signs of like, I'm good. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. You can be all wrapped up in it. Again, American with all your free time, and this is your first world problems that snowflakes taste better in January and December. And I just like him being like, yeah, they're fine.
But like, what a progress. I seriously was like, that's something that would come out of like one of my friends' mouth. They're like, oh, I don't do December, blah, blah.
Oh my God.
That's what I'm like, oh my God, the fact that he wrote that back then.
You're right. It is amazing. So your generation. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Kels, but we had a girl in our neighborhood who legit used this line. She's like, I don't eat December snow either.
Oh my God.
I won't name drop just in case she listens. But yeah, she was, and she was as big a B as Lucy. She was just like, I don't do December snow. And just snobby all like that.
That's funny. And
they're all trying to throw snowballs to knock a tin can off a fence. Interesting enough, Linus knocks it off with his blanket. And to me, this is establishing Linus as the most secure and confident. You know, the way he walks by, he's like, okay, you civilians are all like throwing your snowballs, missing. Effortlessly flicks his blanket, knocks it off. But also the other thing I noticed is that this is the beginning of kind of Linus's blanket almost being tantamount to Wonder Woman's magic lasso. Like he's able to start using it for, you know, you see it throughout. He starts, it's used for much more. And even on this episode, it's much more than his blanket. And I want to ask you guys something again. And I'm sure you're going to know this from our childhood. Blankets were a big deal. I mean, I had to outgrow mine. And I remember as mine came apart, sucking my thumb, having my blanket. They used to call me Linus, my family, you know, because I had the sucking the thumb, I had the blanket. And then as the blanket even came apart, I remember my mom just letting me keep one piece of it.
Yep.
But Kelsey and Evan, was blankets like a big deal? Like keeping your blanket? Was that a, no, huh?
I didn't have a blanket. I had a pillow. A little pillow that, similar, Kev, my mom washed it and it exploded in the washing machine. And I remember vividly coming home.
How do we get
school.
You to therapy? Evan, who do you know? Evan, you must have somebody on speed dial for her. This is terrible.
Devastated.
I don't. Oh, that's hilarious.
And then she tried to repair it and put it in a new pillowcase. And I still have it.
Wow. Oh, you still have
my little pillow.
My wife still has her stuffed animal from childhood. That
cute.
She loved. I had a Dapper Dan, if you remember. It was Dressy Bessie and Dapper Dan. Yeah. Remember, Ann?
Of course. Yes. My brother had the Dapper Dan. But on the blanket thing, kind of funny, my fifth birthday, I too, Kev, was a thumb sucker, blanket carrier. Mm-hmm. I went cold turkey, threw the blanket out in the trash, stopped sucking the
thumb.
It's
a big deal. It's like quitting smoking to get rid of the thumb sucking. No, seriously, Kelson, again, is it a thing anymore with kids? Ann, do you notice like with your...
I think it is.
Now they give them like these.
Oh, because of the pacifier.
Sucky things that they wear.
Yeah,
on,
that's
like
why.
Lanyards,
it's a thing of the past, maybe.
Which is.
Yeah, my
weirder,
sister used to suck her thumb.
Yeah.
Evan, when you, all the Adderall you took, did that take you away from the sucking of the thumb? I'm just.
Was it Prozac or both? A problem for like some of my siblings. From what I have heard and remember, less so for me. So I'm going to say it's not dead. Still looking kids too. I imagine it's just
the Adderall did numb it.
Got it.
Okay. Kev, one other thing.
Adderall, I can't say.
One other thing, if I may point out in that scene, I loved how Charlie Brown did the big baseball wind up with his.
Yes, I love that.
His snowball, and it does the tie back to the origins of the show where was it Mendelsohn who is the documentary filmmaker who had just done the documentary on Willie Mays. Yes. And so they tied a little piece of that baseball
Schultz's cool.
baseball love and his love in. And Ev, you noticed it too, I guess, where he did the big wind up with the ball behind his back mm-hmm. like a pitcher. I thought that was super fun.
Only to miss. Classic. Yep. And it's funny. One of the things they talked about when they were pitching the documentary, they were like, listen, you know, Mendelsohn, I just did this documentary on Willie Mays, the greatest baseball player of all time. Now I want to do it on the biggest loser character of all time, John Brown. And of course, the execs all have the blank stares like, yeah, okay, that sounds great. Pass. What else you got? Big Sister Lucy yells at Linus and says, you know, you think you're so smart with that blanket. What are you going to do when you grow up? And again, Linus is just so chilled. He's like, maybe I'll make it into a sport coat.
Right.
And then I just thought even his deflecting of shaming like that, especially to a little brother, like this is where, you know, you see poor Charlie Brown takes all the shaming and gets beat up. But he's so resilient. He's like, yeah, I'm good. And it's interesting. Like, I think that I don't know if this was the later he actually fashions the shepherd. Yeah. When she's directing him in the play, and I don't want to jump ahead. He changes it into looking like a shepherd. He uses the blanket to put on his head when she's like, you can't come out there and perform that. And he, sure enough, he's like, of course I can't. Okay, now Charlie Brown pulls up a chair for psychiatric help. So even this, psychiatric help, I'm just really surprised at the network and the executives, not in the sense that like back then people would be offended. Today, some of the stuff might be offensive and we should talk about that. But back then, I could just see a suit being like, no kid's going to get that. You're going to lose them. But yet all that stuff. So I just give them I'm surprised that the network execs allow this because like, I've just dealt with these people over the years. And usually it's like, oh no. No kid's going to want to sit through it. And by the way, like, I feel like they would say that today. Yeah. A lot of this stuff wouldn't have flown from the music to the lines. They'd say no kid's going to get it. Or they'd say, well, are you making South Park and Rick and Morty? Because then it's fine. But if you're making something for Nick Jr. or Disney Channel, I mean, this isn't going to fly. So it's very interesting. Evan, I'm going to ask you and Kelsey as well. But in all seriousness, some of this talk about the phobias and the, you know, do you think there is an argument where this would in any way, shape, form be offensive today to anyone, you know, with the. I just feel like everything's so offensive, and I didn't know if there was somebody, if there's a world in which or a group in which would say, you know, you're making light of mental illness or phobias.
To my eyes, there's nothing about it. I don't want to say that's universally true, but I don't see any issue there personally.
Got it. Kelsey, too, you're okay with that?
Yeah, it didn't bother me.
Wow. Nice. I'm still scarred. kidding. So Charlie Brown brings up his, but here's the other thing too. Like she actually gives insightful commentary and advice because he brings up his depression and she assures him that as they say on TV, the mere fact that you realize you need help means you're not too far gone.
Right.
Which is so true. You know, Oprah says, you know better, you do better. But also I think when you're aware of an issue, you know, you're almost halfway there to resolving it. Again, progressive thinking for this time.
Right. And to your point, Kev, like in the like back when this was made, that mental health was never discussed. Like it was never talked about with adults or kids. So the fact that she said that, you know, and this aired at 7:30 at night when it first aired. So it's like it wasn't even on later. So the fact that they had this in a kid's show at that time was really a progressive and amazing.
Side note, back in the day, Ann Nichols meant something to
right.
Today, I don't know what they are.
I think that's what I sold my Snoopy snow cones for.
You got your nickel. Oh,
maybe
yeah.
a dime. I think it was a nickel.
Kevin, I use nickels at the, in LA at the little freaking things that we have, the street meters.
You still do? But I feel like they give you 30 seconds. You don't get, I'm a dime and quarters guy. Cause you know, I've set your car up with all your
change
first.
And I used my 20 the other day and I replaced it.
Did you replace it? Okay. Just note to all the fans of Christmas specials. We love nice little stocking stuffer that could be very thoughtful that Uncle Kevin has provided his staff with. But I get a little leather change purse, zippered one. I stuff it with some silver. I insert what I like to call a feel good $20 bill.
Nice.
And I said, Kelsey, this stays hidden in your car. For meters, so you don't end up with a $75 ticket. But also, if you're in an emergency, you have your feel good 20, but I gave it to you with one stipulation. And what was that, Kelsey?
That if I use it, I must replace it.
Yeah.
Yes. And you did.
And I did.
Because if you don't, we call that being millennialed.
Yeah.
How many times, like, wait, where's my emergency key? Where's my all the time? Gone. Never replaced. They'll use the emergency key at my office. And then Stephen, who works for me, he would look at the key and then he would try to figure out how far he could throw it down the street. I digress. So then she asked him about his fears, which again, I think is really accurate. You know, what are you afraid of? You know, and you had pointed this out. Alerphasia is the fear of cats, which is actually made up.
Right.
Finally, Lucy asks him if he has pantophobia, which is the fear of everything. And then that's when Charlie Brown snaps and yells, actually fights back a little bit, knocks her on her back. And then he opens up about his troubles with Christmas. And again, she gives him good advice. You need involvement. And she tells him that he should be the director of the Christmas play. He lights up because he actually gets an invite. Me? You want me to be the director of the Christmas play? I want to ask you guys, was this Lucy's selfish need for a director, someone to do all the grunt work behind the scenes so they could all be a star? Or was this actually her trying to help him? Question. I want to put it out there.
Ooh.
Now that you say it, I think A, but when I was watching it, I felt B.
Okay.
I kind of thought of a concept here that I don't know how well known, but I feel like she's maybe kind of pulling a glass cliff on him, which is like, I only know this term by accident, but it's like an extension of the glass ceiling kind of.
Oh.
It's like this trend where women are promoted to like CEOs or like high positions in companies that are like about to go through like a really bad period or crash completely. So from the outside, it looks like they're like lifting women up, but actually they're like being positioned as a scapegoat.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. So gender roles are reversed. But I was like, I think maybe she's glass cliffing. Again, I hope I'm using that term correctly.
Whether you are or you aren't, that's how it is. Kelsey, great idea for the next one of my companies that goes under. Write that down, please. Glass cliffing. and you, congratulations, you'll be my next CEO.
Thank you. I'm all about it.
Failing. I love this. Thank you, Evan, for teaching me this. Wonderful idea.
Yeah, I only know it by accident. I don't know. But I was.
No, like, but by the way, it does.
Like, wow, that is.
It seems
that
plausible.
Makes an alarming amount of sense that that's a thing.
Yeah, it really does.
But I kind of felt here like maybe she's doing like she knows he's probably not going to be a popular choice. This she knows it's a big task that is probably too big for him.
Interesting.
So let's pick the obvious guy to fail in this case.
So Ev, may I ask you a question on that though? Do you think she thought the play was going to fail and that's why she gave him the glass cliff?
I think maybe I don't like we don't know if it's her responsibility, but apparently she has enough to like just say yes, it's you. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was hers. This is an ungenerous reading of Lucy. Also, maybe she really is trying to help him out.
Well, we know she has
a lot of motivation.
We see some nice moments in her, especially in the Halloween episode where whose line is from the pumpkin patch from freezing. It's interesting. She admits her depression over Christmas too, which I thought was great. They're finding some common ground. But then when she reveals why, you see how funny this is. And then also at the same time. So to me, like Schultz keeps going back and forth in this, which I never saw when I was younger, between humor and he's making a statement about the commercialization of Christmas. So she's like, I get depressed too. So we, like I said, we're seeing some common ground here. I get toys and stuff, but I don't get what I really want. And he's like, well, what do you really want? She's like, real estate.
Right.
So
that was iconic. I loved that.
Really funny. Mm-hmm. And again, it's funny meets the commercialization of Christmas. Back to the commercialization, we see Snoopy decorating his doghouse. He shows Charlie Brown a flyer about finding the true meaning of Christmas and win money, money, money for a lighting display contest. Charlie Brown, oh no, even my own dog has gone commercial. I can't stand it.
And Kev, to your point earlier about Snoopy just being like rogue or whatever, like, you're just saying that, like the fact that the dog wants to win money, money, money is so hilarious.
Yeah. So what I like about him, he doesn't care, but he's also not really involved either. He is more, God, he's really more Kelsey from your generation. This Snoopy would have selfies everywhere.
Yeah.
It would be all about him. Yeah, he could. He totally goes with the flow when you think about it. He's all about what the flow is, but it's all about him. He doesn't give a shit.
He gives zero Fs.
Zero Fs given, as the kids say. Charlie Brown sees Sally outside with a clipboard. She's been looking for him to help her write a letter to Santa. The letter starts out sweet with her asking about Santa's summer and wife. Like, again, starts out so sensitive and sweet and caring, but then she goes millennial in a heartbeat, right? I've been extra good this year, so, and then gives a huge list of presents. And if that's too complicated, send money. Tens and 20s, please.
Bell's your favorite.
My favorite. I love how specific she was too about size and color. And then she's like, you know what? If that's just too hard, just send me cash.
Yeah.
Because that was me every year to my parents. And they were like, no, that's not what you're getting.
I'll make it easy on you. Just send the money.
Just give me cash. So funny that, like a millennial, when you call it again, and I haven't dealt enough with Gen Z, Ev, but like my millennial staff, when they get called out, like Sally gets called out, because the problem is, like, even my little sister's commercial, she's confused. And she's like, I just want my fair share.
Right. Kelsey,
is she not the predecessor of your generation?
She really is.
She's so confused.
Bless her.
Well, I just want my fair share. What do you, again,
she's like, what am I doing wrong?
And if you could see that Roxy, who, you know, runs After Buzz with me, Roxy is, you know,
I remember from the Tomorrow generation. Show.
Yeah. And so Roxy, you know, who has an old soul, you would all, she'd be, Kev, it's my, please just don't make eye contact with them. Let me talk to them. She's like, of course they're insane. I'm like, wait, if I lost my, I just want my fair share.
That's my fair share. That's all I want.
If you notice with Sally, the choppy editing, you know, it's not, if you listen carefully, the choppy editing, you know, again, we, you know, talked about this, the opening, but she was a 6-year-old actress. Couldn't really remember her line. So a lot of those kids, the lines are fed to them, and even just a couple of words at a time. So that's why if you listen carefully, you have all this choppiness that's in it. When we see the gang, they're all dancing in the auditorium, and this is where you see all the iconic dancing. You know, that one guy with the shoulders back, right, and he just kind of bobs his head left and right. It's the famous Peanuts dance that you see. Everyone's got their own little cool dance there, but he's got that one. You know, the one I'm talking about, his shoulders are back. Yeah.
Kev, can I ask you, the back in the day, did you and your brothers get up in front of the TV and dance along while it was playing?
No, they would have beat me.
Oh, we totally got up and danced. I did like the shermie in the back, which is basically the white man overbite.
I think when you have like all boys, like everyone's busy, you know, and you have older brothers, you just don't want to be uncool.
Right.
You know, you're definitely more. I was more the Charlie Brown, I think, I would suppose. Yeah. You're trying to find your way, but yeah, no, you would have gotten the beat down. So sadly, no snow cone machine for Kev and no dancing. No. Once they find out Charlie Brown is the director, it breaks my heart. They all lament this will be the worst play ever. Even Snoopy boos him. But it's so shameful.
Hate that the dog boos his owner.
I know. That's the one thing about Snoop. I'm like, can we just back CB, buddy? Can we at least, you know, A2? Can we at least do that?
Right.
Well, this is something that's always confused me in, like, because I haven't seen, like, every Peanuts thing, but I have seen quite a few of them. I don't understand where he's gotten this reputation from. Because I feel like there are people where, like, you hear their thing or, like, they're going to be involved, and it is like, oh, that's a problem. But we know why. Like, it's always, they have a history, and it's like, we can all see exactly where that's going. How has he gained reputation for just being bad at everything? Because it doesn't seem like none of them are willing to step up. None of them are willing to step up and be like, I would do a better job. Like, why not?
No. But again, Evan, you're young. Evan, classic civilians. That's classic. I mean, there's a great line in The Simpsons where Grandpa Simpson went back to work and he's working at a fast food restaurant. And he has this realization. He's like, wait a second. I shouldn't be here doing this. I need to be on the other side of the counter complaining like the rest of you. Yeah, civilians never want solutions. You want to complain. It's all about the complaining and you're getting screwed in life. And never about stepping up. No, way easier to beat down the one guy than it is, or girl, than it is to actually have the courage to step up and do it. to that point,
just don't get what he's been doing all these.
Oh, well,
years
we don't know. We have like, to. I think you have to figure backstory. You know, like, remember, by this time, he's, I don't know, whatever, second grade, third grade. I mean, who knows how much paste he ate.
Right.
By the way, paste was a thing. I don't know. Did you guys have paste, Kelsey and Evan?
No.
No. With but it. I have, like, I've heard that, but I've, yeah, we never
yeah,
had paste.
Yeah, we, it was Arts and Crafts was, yeah, using our, paste was a big deal. Take off your paste.
With that little stick, and some yeah. kids turned it, that little stick into the spoon.
Yeah, unfortunately. Ew. Yeah.
We but digress. Here's the thing
which I really admire. He goes next, he standing next to the director chair. What I love about Charlie Brown is his earnestness that almost doesn't go away. There was a kid that I went to high school with, excuse me, junior high, because it was actually sad. He actually had a brain tumor and he passed away.
Oh no.
It always just still haunts me because he was like a Charlie Brown. Dressed really well and just picked on, like, but he had the Charlie Brown spirit where he would go out for the school play. Like, he was so earnest and would get knocked down, but keep getting back up. And what I love about this is he does ask for their respect. So it's a little selfish for a minute, but everything he goes over, if you know theater, it's like he went and did the work to learn what a director would do. And he actually gives them what they need. So again, like, he's, I don't know, he continues to show me he's better than them. But again, civilians, it's usually the people that are vibrating higher that are the ones that civilians don't understand, aren't going to get. I digress. It's funny. I think with Charles Schulz too, hearing all his interviews, probably until the end, and even, it's weird, even though he becomes probably a billionaire or like at least worth several hundred million, to me, there's no, I don't know what the difference is anyway. But I feel like he carried this melancholy view of life. Like, no matter how hard you try, sometimes you just fall short, and that's life.
Yeah.
And I think that was his, just seeing some of the interviews, it seemed like that was his feeling. You know, even though he kept being resilient, getting back up like Charlie Brown, but then actually achieved many, many victories that he probably wouldn't have achieved had he not been knocked down. That's why I'd like to think in Charlie Brown's programming, I know we talked about this in earlier episodes, where he could have been bullied to a point that, you know, he ends up being this really frustrated mediocrity in a middle management position. But right. At the same time, if you look how Schulz ended up, maybe Charlie Brown would have gone on to become, you know, super successful. Then eventually Me Too'd and canceled at some point. But but early on, before then, he would have been really successful.
Well, you know, what's interesting to your point, Kev, is I read something, an interview with Schulz after this special became really successful. And he mentioned that he and Bill Melendez still looked at the animation of it as a failure, that it was terrible.
Yeah, so, we'll get there. I talked about that at the opening, you know, it was initially, but again, that might be his personality of always like it's half empty, you know, but when of course, it wasn't, you know, with his life. So just interesting. It's the theme that seems to go through it. As he's explaining this, they all just, again, have their ADD or ADHD moment where they all just start dancing to the great music. He yells for them to stop and he orders Lucy, the script girl, to pass out the scripts. Now, Frida is the redheaded girl. She gets the part as the innkeeper's wife, wondering if innkeeper's wives have naturally curly hair. Again, Kelsey, right? I think Frida totally has a great Instagram account.
Yeah.
I think she gets a lot of likes.
Yep.
Dare I say, influencer.
She makes another hair comment later that I also loved.
Well, Pigpen is going to be the innkeeper. Despite my outward appearance, I will try to run a neat inn. So he speaks so eloquently. Shermie, every Christmas is the same because I always am playing a shepherd. And again, like, I don't really care about Shermie. You know, he might just be a glorified extra, but okay, buddy. Snoopy has to play all the animals, even the penguin. And he goes through all of things to show he can do it. But then he starts mocking Lucy, which I love.
Yep.
Like, behind her back, he's mouthing her words. And she, of course, being the violent little bee that she is, always resorting to violence, she throws a punch at him. But, you know, where she connects with everyone else, he ducks it because he is Joe Cool. And then his response, which I love, is rather than punch her back, the big lick on the face. And I remember like that being a, give me hot water, disinfect it. And, you know, and I forget because all I do every day, Kelsey, and you do it with me, is kiss my dogs on the face. In fact, Maximus, my shepherd, doesn't get to eat unless he gives me a kiss. And he gives me the kiss and then he knows he can eat. There's Winnie coming in. Cuddling with Auntie Kelsey. But I think when I see kids get the lick, they go, they all kind of freak out. It's kind of funny. But back then, you know, dogs, rabies was a big thing. They never had shots. They were all off leashes. Yeah.
Right.
It kind of wasn't like it was today. Lucy yells at Linus to get rid of the blanket and then tells him to memorize his lines. He's like, I want to give me a good reason why. Once again, Lucy being violent, it's like, I got five reasons. And she shows him a fist. And the Linus has the great line. Wow. Christmas is not just commercial. It's dangerous. She continues to yell about his stupid blanket, but again, it just rolls right off him and he turns it into a shepherd's headpiece, like I said earlier. Chai Brown starts directing and he asks Schroeder to set the mood. And Schroeder starts playing the song Linus and Lucy. One of the things that Schultz was proud of is that he always, in the strips, Schroeder could really play piano. And he thought that was really advanced to show a little kid that could be a great piano player.
Yep.
And especially would always write about Beethoven, and we'll get into it, you know, as this goes on and why. Frida, our influencer with her red hair, is complaining she can't go on because of the dust. But I love Charlie Brown's response. He compliments the dust because this dust might be from great past civilizations, ancient Babylon, you know, Solomon. What was the other one? Nebuchadnezzar, like all these other people in history, yeah, may have experienced this dust. And Big Ben, again, amazing, not affected at all by the shame. Yeah, he says, it sort of makes you want to treat me with some more respect, doesn't it? And Frida, being an amazing influencer, you're an absolute mess. Look at yourself. He's like, on the contrary, I didn't even think I looked that good when he looks in the mirror.
How adorable.
Which I think is fantastic. And by the way, I want to say, Kelsey, to be a good influencer, Frida would have to show that she supported Pigpen.
Ooh.
So off camera, she'd probably not want to be with him. But then on camera, right? Love and light and acceptance.
Yes.
Showing
everyone's
everybody
a queen. Yeah.
She stands with Pigpen.
She's an ally. Yeah.
She's an ally. Got it. Sally is cast as Linus's wife. She holds the end of his blanket. We have the hearts go in the air. And he says, good grief. By the way, and that's a big Charlie Peanuts thing. Good grief. You know, that's where it. I really think they almost came up with it, Anne, right?
I don't know. I never heard it anywhere else. I'd have to look into that, the origin of it. Kelsey, that's the only place I remember.
Can we bring that back, like some of the other cool phrases you've taught me?
Of course. Good whatever grief. You want.
All right, I'm
good
done.
Grief.
I'm in.
Like Lucy grand. Clark. Aren't we bringing in grand because of Rudolph also?
Yeah, that's grand.
Grand, that's right.
Grand. Lucy calls for a lunch break. Snoopy again does cool tricks with the bowl. Lucy then asks about her part as Christmas queen. Now, this is interesting. She starts talking about how beautiful she is, and then she asks Charlie Brown if he thinks she's beautiful, and he doesn't answer right away. And I feel like that is such a response from an insecure person, right? Kelsey's pointing to herself. I'm like, going back to my friend Roxy, that's always her. Why didn't you say something? Why didn't you think of that line to respond?
I texted my mom and I said, I've never connected with Lucy more. I feel like that's such like a my generation again thing where it's like, excuse me, you did not tell me I was pretty 72 times. Like, okay, what are we doing here?
Question to the group as I saw this scene. Is it just all about Lucy and she wants compliments, or is she a little bit flirting with Charlie Brown?
I think it's a little flirty.
And?
Oh, wow. I never saw the flirting.
Well, she's fluttering her eyebrows and she's like, aren't I beautiful?
I think like a lot of the pretty girls always are looking for the compliments like that. And if they don't get them right away, they don't know what else to do. So maybe using a little of that prowess to get Charlie Brown's, because I think she even calls him Charlie there, if I remember. You know, so kind of given a little nickname. So possibly a little flirty, although I don't think she has any end game in mind. I think it would just to be get for the compliments.
Yeah, no, too young for an end game. By the way, classic civilian, only in the moment. There's no plan.
She's totally in the moment. So I never thought about it, but yeah.
So once again, Linus and Lucy's song plays and they all just start dancing and it's just a hot mess on stage. But again, being civilians, they think it's amazing. Lucy's snapping her fingers. It's like, isn't this great? And Charlie Brown's the only one who gets like, wait, this is not a play. This is just a freaking hot mess. But Lucy explains, and again, this is where like the humor was so advanced. Lucy explains that Christmas is a big commercial racket. It's run by a big Eastern syndicate. I didn't know this, Evan, that clearly the Russian mob runs Christmas. I didn't know that since the 60s.
Yeah, I don't know what sites Lucy's on to find that out, but
right.
We need to look into that.
Poor Charlie Brown insists the play is not going to be commercialized. And he goes, I got it. We need a Christmas tree. It's funny. And this is where I think they suggest they, of course, want the... Lucy says, go find the biggest aluminum tree you can find and have it painted pink. Patty, who's not Peppermint Patty, says, yeah, do something for a change. More shame for Charlie Brown. They head out to the trees. There's tons of multicolored trees. O Tannenbaum is playing. Linus hits the tiny aluminum tree, and you hear the tin sound as he hits it. And he says, this really says Christmas, sarcastically. But now it's funny. Kelsey and Evan, have you ever heard of the aluminum trees?
Not outside of this.
Okay.
No.
So between 56 and probably into the early 70s, silver aluminum trees became a thing. And then you would have this silver aluminum tree, and then a small light, colored light with a rotating gel on the light that had different colors, red, green, say blue and yellow.
Yep.
And that would rotate, and there would just be a light behind it, which you probably burn your finger off if you touched it, because I can't even, right? So, you know, but it would project these multicolors onto this silver aluminum tree, and it would reflect. And I remember we had one. So, I remember it was a big deal to have the new Christmas tree and the old Christmas tree.
Kev, did you think you were so rich because you had the silver tree?
No. I will tell you, no, it was a thing that, because it was more of a 60s thing, and I wasn't a child of the 60s that they had it. But again, my family, because just were not sentimental, I remember even then they threw it out. I'm like, why would you throw? I even knew back then. I'm like, it's literally an antique, because I knew like no one. I would love to have had this thing right now, because I'd like to see. They do make them now. They make them in different colors, but I would love to see what I vaguely remember. Probably when I was two or three. I have a pretty good memory. I do remember seeing them, but I'd like to see what one if the that light worked and it did cause it to reflect. And did you guys have a silver one?
Oh, we had the silver. No, my parents and I used to, I loved it. It was like my favorite thing. And same with you. Like, I don't understand why they threw it out, but it was one of those, like once the 80s came, it was out with the sparkly silver tree. But I used to sit like behind my dad's chair and watch it almost weirdly with the different color lights, like reflecting off the tinsely silver branches. I thought it was the best part of Christmas. Loved it.
Yeah. Even though I'm turning into a minimalist, there's a side of me who wants to go on eBay and see if I can find one.
Ooh, good call.
Listen.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, shout out to the Hank's Craft old vaporizers. Remember those cold air vaporizers, Anne?
Yeah, the green ones that sat on the floor.
Yeah, they could be on the floor. I like them on the nightstand next to me. And the reason I speak in present tense is because I actually have a collection of them. I have about 15 or 20 of them.
You're kidding.
And if you'd like one.
You gave me one.
Yeah, Kelsey has one. Just nice, cool mist comes on your face. The sun is settling. You just have to clean. I just make sure it gets dried out every night because you don't want them to be moldy.
Right.
I digress, people. But if you want to go back to your childhoods.
I do.
If you really want to have your Peter Pan, and I will send you one. So off there, I want to get the address where you're. I know you're overseas right now or you're out of the States. So I will be sending you one, and yes, and you'll have to give me your thoughts on it. But yeah, I cornered the mark because I'm like, if these things break, I'm going to need them to get me through the next 20 years of the last years of my life. I can't run out of humidifiers. So I'd like to think I have one of the larger Hank's Craft humidifier collections on the West Coast.
I think you need a website dedicated to it, Kev. I'm loving it.
Here's the thing, Ian, we don't want too much attention. I don't want to become a target. Okay. I don't want to become a target. So finally, they come across a little wooden tree, and it's small, and it's pathetic. But Charlie Brown says, I feel like this tree really needs me. And this is where you just see he's really sweet and sensitive and so much more evolved than the group of civilians. Funny line, do they still make wooden trees? Making a little, you know, a little joke there. But the thing is now, as much as we want to praise Linus, even he balks at the tree. She's like, I don't know, Charlie Brown. Remember what Lucy said?
Right.
He doesn't really see it in the tree. So Charlie Brown, you know, is our definitely anti-hero, but he's the one. He's the one driving all of this. Linus, who's younger, I mean, is the amazing sidekick. But it was interesting. He blinked here.
Yeah. Maybe he had a little bit of that big sister fear. Go ahead, Evan.
What's that, Evan?
No, I think it's a form of support. Like, he's telling him it's a bad idea.
Because you're going to get pounded. Yeah.
Yeah, it's caution. But after, like, Charlie Brown says, this is what we're doing, he stops protesting. I think he's just giving steps.
Good. Thank you for being the smartest one on the call to correct me. But yeah, you're right. I think you're right. Yeah, no, I see it that way. I think you're right. Yeah, he's like, he's saving him from, you know, impending doom. Then we have Lucy leaning in on her crush, which is Schroeder. He shares the music he has chosen to play, which of course is Beethoven. And she's like, this isn't Christmas music. And he's like, it's Beethoven Christmas music. Now, Charles Schulz wouldn't waver on this. He, you know, said, I have to have Beethoven in this. I don't care. I don't care if kids know it. I don't care if the parents know it. We're not negotiating this. I'm going to find a way to get Beethoven in this special. Lucy, of course, is not impressed. And Kelsey, you would understand this because back then he didn't even have his picture on bubblegum cards. Today, probably he wouldn't even have an Instagram account, or he'd have an Instagram account, but he wouldn't have a blue check, right? He'd have an Instagram account, but he wouldn't have a lot of followers.
Not verified, right.
He's not verified, right. He lets out a good grief because he's perturbed. Snoopy, as always, Joe Cool, zips in, starts dancing on top of the piano. He even does a Cossack dance until the music stops and he slithers away embarrassed. Schroeder goes on to play more classical music. Lucy asks for Jingle Bells. He plays many different versions of Jingle Bells. That's not Jingle Bells. That's not Jingle Bells. And finally gets so angry, he does the two-finger version. She's like, oh, that's more like it. I thought that was just more humor and more commentary on the commercialization of Christmas.
Yeah, I love that scene.
Okay, see, Charlie Brown and Elias return with the tree. The gang, surprise, surprise, shame him massively. I knew he would screw it up. You're hopeless. You've been dumb before, but this time you really did it. Then they all laugh at him, and even Snoopy laughs. They all leave, leaving him in the tree alone, but Linus does stay behind. Charlie Brown tells Linus that he was right. I guess I don't really know what Christmas is. And then that's where Charlie Brown yells the iconic, is there anyone out there who knows what Christmas is all about? And then Linus, sure. Charlie Brown, and he shrugs. I can tell you what Christmas is really about. And that's when Linus heads to the stage. And the lights dim. The spotlight goes on. And there's a slow zoom to Linus on the stage. It's really quiet. And he tells a Christmas story. And I'm going to see if I can bring it up for everyone right now.
And there were the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them. The glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid, and the angel said unto them, fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men.
Drop the mic. I love the confident walk-off.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Hell yeah, it is, Evan. Deal with it. And we see Charlie Brown grabbing the little tree with a smile. I love this moment. Walks by all the civilians, finally, not thinking about any of them. Like, I'm good. You guys all be civilians. You be into your commercialization. But here's the thing, classic civilians, what do?
They follow
him, and out he goes. So we know Charlie Brown's going to go home, and at this point he's going to decide he's going to decorate the tree. But I love that moment. I love that. I don't know. Okay, I really digress now. I feel like my opinion is that there is a higher power out there, and that higher power chooses to speak through all of us. And I think that whether it's Gandhi or Buddha or Jesus, or, you know, I think in many of us in our daily lives, there's many people here who speak to us. And I think that this is just another way that we're being spoken to. And so for me, I don't have a problem with the fact that, you know, because I think what he's saying is beautiful and sweet. I'm not a very religious person, but I, especially with organized religion, but I saw it as a really sweet moment, and I'm really glad that it has stayed the test of time. I know with Little Drummer Boy, which we'll cover at some point, that has not, that did not hold up. That was very extreme with religion. They felt like it made Arabs look really bad. And so that got shelved and has only slowly made its way back because of streaming and some of the religious channels. I thought it was just a beautiful speech, and especially I love Charlie Brown's reaction. So I want to throw it out to the round table, so to speak.
Kev, I love that. I love that sentiment. And if you had continued my favorite part after the speech, I totally agree when Charlie Brown's smiling. And then I noticed, and I hadn't noticed it ever before, when he rounds the corner on his way home, he's actually skipping. So if you continue scene.
Yes, no.
Did I jump ahead too much?
A little bit, but it's okay.
And you know, that just made me so filled with joy, especially
because what they're saying no longer matters. He's finally, you know, broken away from, you know, they've all been beating him up. And then he's just like rises above it. And what I love about it is, you know, I feel like low vibration would be sticking it up there, you know what, or being, you know, hateful to them. But instead, he's just like, no. I'm going to the bigger meaning of what Christmas really is. And this poor little tree.
Yeah.
I see the beauty in it and we're good. And when he is walking home, the editors bring Linus's words back in, they replay it. And that's where he's like, I'll show him. And he starts skipping because he's excited. Millennial Gen Z, I don't know, nothing. No emotional connection at all. Nothing.
I thought it was nice. I felt like it was like just kind of redeeming for him. I was like, yeah. Finally, he gets his, he's okay, and just kind of pushes them out, which I don't know. You know, it was just, it was like, it was nice. It was a nice way to end it. I think perhaps that's why, I don't know, the other ones I liked, the other Peanuts specials, but I really liked this one. I felt like it left me with a good feeling.
Yeah. Evan?
So.
Yeah, I'm fine with it being in there.
You're such a stalk. I love it.
I don't know what I have more to say with it. I mean,
did you at least think it was a cool moment that he, you know, he at least picking up the tree to go do his own thing?
No, yeah, I do love that. Like his, I guess we'll get to that in a minute. I do love his decision here to stand by his choice of like this tree that he feels needs him. Yeah, I like that.
And listen, I'm not all sentimental because I love, conversely, how Snoopy, of course, wins first prize being the ultimate civilian with all his lights and stuff like that. I guess what I like about Snoopy's version of civilian life is that he's just down for the fun. He doesn't want to shame anyone else. And there are those people. There are those people I know who love that are all wrapped up in Star Wars or the Marvel movies or professional wrestling or whatever. But they're just happy and they're fun about it. You know, it's not hateful or angry or toxic. And I say more power to him. And to me, that's Snoopy. So Charlie Brown steals one of the ornaments off the doghouse. He places it on the branch. And then what happens? The tree falls over. The music stops. So just when Charlie Brown has this one moment where he feels good, gets knocked back down. And then he says, I've killed it, which I don't think they would say today. Because it's really haunting, like, you know, for a kid special, I've killed it. I remember that hurt me as a kid, to see the tree on the ground and it curled over and he's like, I've killed it. And he says, everything I touch gets ruined. And he walks away really sad. But then Linus, man, gotta love it, who's just, I'm going to pick the ball up for my quarterback. My running back, Linus, going to pick up the ball. I'm going to run with it. Gives the tree a little love, wraps his blanket around the base. And then the rest of the civilians kind of get it in that moment. And they all jump in and decorate it. And of course, Lucy can't help. And, you know, we have to think that we're making another 15 years of these specials. Can't have the mark too much. Lucy still has to say, Charlie Brown is a blockhead. Right. But he did get a nice treat. Right. And then what I love, he comes back and it's like, I love the saying, not such a bad little treat after all. And Charlie Brown returns, and then all the menus said, Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. And then hark the heralds and credits. I just thought it was beautiful. And I will say that I have fallen back in love with this special. And now this is my favorite.
Wow.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Yeah, I think so because of it's the most meaningful. I think that Thanksgiving had the same meaning, but it was this was the first one. It was a little more powerful.
Yeah.
But to me, I thought it was beautiful. I really, really have a deeper appreciation for this. I'm glad we did it. And I really enjoyed it. Just saying, kids. All right.
Me so, too, Kev.
Really?
Me too.
I feel, listen, I want to say this in defense of Kelsey. Kelsey watches these specials in the middle of juggling 40 balls in the air. So we don't get full. I don't think she has time to really connect with this stuff.
But this one was my favorite.
Really?
Yes. I said that at the beginning. This is my favorite special we've watched. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think that I just connected more with this one than the other ones. Like, again, can't get over how mad Rudolph made me. Not happy about it. But this one just, I was actually like laughing out loud at some of the parts.
Nice.
All right. Very good.
So and I really enjoyed it.
All right. All right. And because I think, I don't know, we're the most sentimental of this crew. Was it not a nice moment to see Charlie Brown, you know, in this tree become beautiful?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the best part of the whole show when he's skipping down the street there after grabbing his tree. And when you just replayed that, I mean, and with your sentiment and stuff, it makes me reflect back on kind of my own, I don't want to call it hating, but this hadn't been in my top. And in the discussion here, I'm like, wow, this actually has so many really important messages and good holiday messages that it came up a couple notches just within our discussion here this afternoon. Yeah. So I really like that part. Funny, when you were just talking about when Charlie Brown said, oh, I killed it. I remembered when we were doing, Ev, one of your favorites, the Great Pumpkin, there was a, you didn't have to kill it when with the pumpkin. So that seems to be like a little bit of a theme with the Schultz stuff too. And I'd like to look into that further. But yeah, I'm really glad we did this one too. It's just a good way to kick off Christmas weekend and just a nice message.
Spread the word. Keep giving the comments. Your comments have been fantastic. And we really appreciate it. There's so many more of these to do. So many other Rankin Bass specials. So many other. Yeah, I feel like we can do this season after season after season. Yeah, like just, I don't know. Merry Christmas to everyone out there. And if they do want to text us any comments,
I was
what
just
is
gonna...
our number? Thank you, Ann.
Thanks, Kev. Our text number is 351-251-2511. That text number again is 351-251-2511. Send us comments, questions, or general thoughts.
Yeah, we love hearing it. If there's other specials you want us to cover, then please just let us know.
We have to get out of here. You guys, everyone, Merry Christmas. Let's keep that holiday spirit going. And I guess you can tell them we will
talk shortly.
Bye.
Talk shortly. Bye.